Broadcasting from the Derby City, 840 WHAS in Louisville, Kentucky, one of the many iHeart studios. Connie Willis discussing Montauk Project along with Preston B. Nichols. He will be with us for the next 2 hours. We will be taking phone calls later, and we want you to stick around to hear more on Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast AM with Connie Willis and Preston B. Nichols. Tonight we are discussing Preston's role with Montauk Project and a lot of other things we're going to discuss with him too. Preston, are you back with me?
Yep.
Hey there. Okay, here's a question for you. If you can go into this, the Montauk Project and the Philadelphia Experiment, how did they intertwine with each other?
Well, there's a biorhythm, you could call it that, that the Earth has that connects every 20 years, 83, 63, 43. And some of the equipment used in the Montauk Project was off the Eldridge, you know, from Project Rainbow. And we literally made a space-time bridge between the Eldridge in Norfolk to Montauk Point. In fact, some people claim they saw the Eldridge in 1943 off of Montauk Point. That I can't verify either way. So it basically became a time portal. It was used like as the master calibrating time portal, you know, from August 12, 83 to August 12, 43. And of course, the Cameron brothers, who was Duncan Cameron and Al Bielek, they jumped overboard from the Eldridge, ended up at Montauk Point, just as the movie and the story showed. Then they went back to shut down the Eldridge.
Because,
in a nutshell, soundbite is the Philadelphia Experiment, a.k.a. Project Rainbow, which is the real project. And yes, I have read the final reports on it.
And?
It's pretty much what the common storyline has for the Philadelphia Experiment. And it wasn't where Al Bielek went chasing his brother around the country like in the foreign EMI movie.
So what did you find out?
It was radar invisibility. Actually, they achieved full invisibility, and it made the connection between the two times. The ship basically dissolved in the quantum background and then came back again. And one of the notable things was the person standing on the deck, if they moved on the deck, they might have ended up in the wall physically, you know, when it rematerialized again.
So you definitely learned from that to not move in the future or not do the experiment with people on board.
From what I've been able to find out, until in the 60s, late 50s, early 60s, when a stealth was worked on at Brookhaven Lab, that project was pretty much shelved.
What about Montauk? I know that that's closed down, but are these projects still going? I can't imagine them not.
Well, 2002, there was still something going on at Montauk. Because I did pick up the 400 hertz line frequencies coming out of the underground at Montauk.
Mm.
I know I was a huge headache to them out there because I would go out with an old school bus loaded with scientific equipment and detect whatever I could out there.
That's interesting. So you were still trying to see what was happening?
I know up to 2002, which was the last time I was out there with any equipment, there was still military 400 hertz power on the ground.
Well, if back then they're doing time travel and reverse engineering of alien technology and mind control, I mean, what could they be doing now that's even beyond that?
I believe it's some sort of a defense installation from invasion from outside. And I cannot go into why I believe that.
Oh, why not?
Something called security.
Ah.
That one I did sign for.
Okay.
If I talk about it, I could be arrested tomorrow.
Well, we don't want that to happen, but we'd be happy to take you back out and try to... that's interesting. So that kind of goes into Philip Snyder conversation.
Yeah.
So do you know about... So that's the stuff you're talking about, you know about?
I know some of it. I knew Phil before he died.
He had some...
We were pretty good friends.
He had incredible stories to tell.
Yeah, like the one at Dulce?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know he did.
Do you know that to be true?
I have no way to say yay or nay on that. That's not in my bailiwick of knowledge.
Do you believe he killed himself, or do you believe he was taken out?
No, I think he was taken out.
Yeah, it didn't seem like he wanted to leave his daughter for sure, or anybody. He kept wanting to get that story out, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wanted to get the story out, no question. Al Bielek knew him very well. Bob Beck from the Psychotronics Association knew him very well. And it was through those two people I got to meet him and have quite a few conversations with him at my place. You know, he came out to East Islip quite a few times.
When people, you know, when it's Philip Snyder, I mean, he was the guy that he told some incredible stories about Dulce and the underground bases.
Yeah.
And he was also, I want to ask you this for sure, Preston. So the aliens, when he, I guess, fell, they lasered him and cut off like his fingers and cut his body open and things came out and all that. But so you saw him. Now you apparently have seen some aliens. So did what he was saying about what they did to him, did that relate and correlate to what you've seen could be the case as well?
No, it didn't.
No?
He was involved in some real nasty aliens. The aliens of Montauk Point weren't that nasty.
What were they like?
All the little guys, they didn't have much of a personality at all. And the big reptilian didn't think his bowels stunk. He was filled with himself.
Oh.
He was a pleiad dog.
What's a pleiad dog?
As far as I get, it has something to do with the Pleiades.
And the reptilians don't like them?
No.
So what did
they really don't like us from the Pleiades?
Well, what did the reptilian one look like, and what was his job, and how was he in relation with you? And I'm thinking you're talking the little ones are grays.
Yeah, the little grays. And the reptilian. You ever watch Star Trek? Remember the episode where Captain Jerk fought something called the Gorn?
Oh yeah,
that's what it looked like.
Mm. Was he tall or short?
Yes, he was about 7 foot tall.
Okay, that would be scary to be next to. Did he sit at a desk?
Yeah, he actually sat at a desk. He was some sort of advisor to somebody out there. I had very, very little to do with him.
Is that because he didn't like you, or you just didn't need to work with him? in any way?
He wasn't involved in the technology much. So I never had much interaction with him.
What were the Grays doing?
Beats the crap out of me. I don't know.
Well, when you saw them, I mean, a lot of people believe, like, the little Grays, they believe that the little Grays are kind of like the taxi cabs of the universe. They're not even real beings. They're robotic. What did you get from that?
Similar to that. As I said, they didn't amount to much. The one thing I remember about the little Grays, boy, did they stink.
Oh.
Why would they stink? They smelled like fecal matter.
Did they live in human conditions? Did they have rooms and showers? And do you know anything about their living quarters?
Oh, we used to regularly take them and throw them in a shower and spray them with Lysol.
So they weren't me. You sprayed them with Lysol?
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
How did how'd that the stink?
Did it work?
No, not really. The stink was horrible.
That's funny. That's funny.
It's
now there's a whole
going into a pool processing plant.
I see. I would think the reptilian would be that way.
No, the reptilian didn't stink. He was just nasty.
Well, so who was behind Montauk? Was it humans and ETs together?
Well, the ETs were advisors. I think it was humans. And I think it's best left unsaid who actually was behind it.
Do you know?
Yeah, I know.
Nothing you can say.
No, I think that's best left unsaid. I don't care to get shot.
I understand. I don't want to be a part of that either for you. So,
it
do
hurts.
You? Yeah, I would think so. Do you?
You know, I've been shot a few times. And believe me, what's really weird is you're driving down the road, then all of a sudden, you see your car going right through another car, and there's no damage.
What do you mean by that?
Over, and we said to each other, "Did you see that?" And the other guy said, "Yeah, I saw that."
What was that? Is that like a time loop of some sort, or?
It beats the crap out of me. I don't know.
So you were driving one way, and another one was coming in another direction, and you went through each other.
Yeah, we literally went through each other.
You both stopped, got out of the car.
Yeah, we pulled over, got out of the car. We're trying to figure out what the heck happened.
Well, here's my one last question with Montauk, and we'll go through some of the other things you're doing. With Montauk, I've always got the impression that extraterrestrials could do anything with their mind without having to use machines. So if you're using machines, it does sound very humanistic, or is it not to where ETs cannot use their mind and manifest and stop and start people in mind control?
I don't know for sure. Go ahead.
I think I lost what you said there. Hello?
What? Huh?
Are you still there?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm here.
Okay. Well, okay. All right. Well, anything else you want to talk about with Montauk? What was the biggest thing there? What was the most horrific thing of all that you saw there?
The most horrific?
Mm-hmm.
was all pretty horrific.
How did you?
I don't know if any particular thing stands out that much.
How did you feel about what they?
I guess the kids.
Yeah, how did you feel about that? What they did to the kids?
Well, I wasn't at all happy with that.
Anything you could have done about it?
No. Would have been totally denied if I exposed it, and I probably would have been shot trying to expose it.
Well, you said you were shot a couple times before. Was that due to Montauk?
I think it was.
Can you tell me about that?
It was drive-by shootings.
Were you telling too much or something, or?
Somebody probably thought I was telling too much.
Was this after the project was done?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It was like 85, 86. Before they finally decided if they killed me, they'd make a martyr out of me like they did with Dr. Jessup.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, if you had a chance to do that all over again, would you, and what would you do?
I don't know. I've never really considered that. I did learn an awful lot from it. It was an avant-garde project. There was an awful lot of discoveries made. They can be applied for good as well as bad. So I probably would consider doing it.
What did you see as the best way time travel was used and the best way the chair was used?
Yes, the best way the chair was used was literally for creation out of the background ethers. And time travel would be used for correcting history. Whenever you do any time travel, you have to be extremely careful what you do, or else you can mess up everything. It's easy.
Yeah, tell me more about that, because if you go in the future and change something, or you go into the past and change something, do if something affects me on any of those ways, will I know it, or it'll just be?
No, you won't know what happened. Because the original past, the original timeline would disappear, and you'd only be arrayed, you'd only be aware of the latest timeline for you.
Are there like a ton of timelines going on? What? I don't understand any of that kind of stuff.
Well, I know we have quite a few time shifts.
And what's that mean?
The flow of time does change quite regularly.
Well, you mentioned, I believe you mentioned somewhere else that you have seen the future of mankind and humankind. And I think you said something like after 2020, you didn't see much.
That's right.
What are you seeing happening with us? And you know what? Hold that thought, because we're going to ask you that when we come back about the future and what you've seen as you've traveled past 2020, so we can all be prepared for that. And we will be taking calls with Preston B. Nichols, so please stick around. Fascinating stuff, without a doubt. Time travel, mind control, machines, and what they can do. Connie Willis here. Happy Valentine's on Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast AM. Hi, Connie Willis here, and we are talking with Preston B. Nichols, best known for his alleged work with Montauk Project. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what he saw in the future for us. We're also going to ask him if there was any proof whatsoever of any of this, and we're also going to be taking your phone calls so you can talk to Preston yourself on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for listening. You're tuned in to Coast AM. Connie Willis here with Preston B. Nichols. Preston, when we left, you were going to tell me about what you saw when you went into the future. What does it hold for us?
basically beyond 2020, the 2020s, there's nothing really there. We did punch through the 6,000, I believe it was 6,037. That's where the horse on the pedestal came from. It was a deserted city with all sorts of overgrowth around the outside of it and in the forest. And that dovetails into other research I've been doing lately on getting semi-religious information, which also says 2023 is the end of it.
Oh, interesting. I remember you also, you were also talking before about there's going to be some sort of split.
Split.
Some sort of split about good and bad. That if we don't, if we're not careful. I thought you had talked about we have a pivotal point of turning into very positive people or very negative people.
Yes, we do. That's correct.
Is that at the 2020 or before then?
That's around 2023.
Okay. And what do you mean by that?
Well, I can go into that if you want. Basically, I have heard from this guy that visited me about up to 5 years ago that claimed to be myself out of the future. I ran DNA testing and it was exact match. The fingerprints matched exactly. He had intimate knowledge which no one else would have. So at this point, I say that's true. This guy probably is me out of the future. Now, one of the visits, he gave me a CD recording that had Justin Hayward's Broken Dream on it, where as the song ends, you get this strange droning sound. And he told me to meditate into that sound, find out what it is and where it's coming from. So I did that. I ended up mentally, see, I meditate with music.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up at what appeared to be the center of the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. I encountered this huge toroidal presence, this possibly a being that was in a toroidal shaped vortex. When I first approached this thing through that music, it said to me, I am the beginning and I am the end. I know all things. And that's where I was told, you know, I get asked questions. It doesn't volunteer any information. And basically, I was told that Judgment Day is in 2023, and that's when we could make a split. Now, part of my mission here is to bring mankind through this and to try to correct the problems, you know, the genetic damage and, you know, the problems that we have. Now, later on, I got interested in my mother's favorite piece of music, something called Mob Lost by Smetana.
Mm-hmm.
The classical music. And through this piece of music, I could contact the same being. Except the music, the section that I contact that being on is called Tabor the Great. And then it goes into a section known as Slavic. Now, according to the legends around it, one legend has my fatherland being the area where Smetana lived in Europe. Another says that Smetana died, went to heaven, met God, came back, and that my fatherland is the land that my father God exists in. In fact, I did a radio show where I talked to Tabor. I was called a Tabor. This guy with a very thick European accent calls me up and says, "You the man that talks to God?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know whether I talk to God." "Well, you talk to Tabor." I said, "That's Tabor." He said, "Well," he explained to me that that was the name of God in Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia way back. Since then, I've come across an ancient Bible from Czechoslovakia, and the first part of it says Tabor created heaven and earth and so on. So Tabor may be another name for God.
Yeah.
I can't really get that out of him. And I make contact with this being almost every night. And he answers my questions, and every answer has been right on the money.
I love hearing that, because you're asking questions, and we've got a load of people wanting to ask you questions. So are you okay to take some phone calls?
Sure.
Okay. Let's go.
At some point, I want to talk about what I'm doing now, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely, we'll do that.
Some phone calls and then go back to that.
You got it. Don't let me forget that. So let's go out to a wild card line two. Ray's in Van Nuys, California. He knows why the aliens smell weird.
Hello, Ray.
Hello, Professor or Doctor Preston. I believe that the aliens don't have big mouths and talk like we do. Is because they inhale fumes and bacteria, and that's how they eat. And they don't have no orifice, you know,
not the
indigestive system like we do. Right. Is because they digest their food under the skin.
Oh, I've heard this also, but I really have no way to firsthand verify it.
Yes.
You know, I haven't and looked them over.
To analyze it, they're going through the universe of warp speeds, breaking in through time barriers and different dimensions. There's no time to go into the bathroom or stop the ship somewhere in a vacuum of space to take a urine or something, a break. Or lunch or anything. So they constantly are eating that way and collecting materials around their ship and transferring it to their atmosphere inside the ship.
Ray, thank you very much for that question. And Preston, you kind of think that that's probably the case as well?
It's a possibility. See, I'm not going to tell you something is true unless I know it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I wrote in the front of my book, you can take this as truth or you can take this as fiction. Read it as you would like.
Well, it does make some sense what he's talking about for sure. So a nice little theory there. Let's go out to Joey in Las Vegas, first-time caller. Joey, say hello to Preston. Hey there.
Hello, Joey. Yes, how you doing, Preston? I got a question and a comment, and the question is, were you ever aware of the missions that the boys were sent on, and if they completed them?
Yeah, when I was working deprogramming some of the boys, I would hear all about the missions, and it sure sounded like they completed some of them.
Oh, so
that's how I know so far it has something to do with some sort of space wars.
Right, right. Yeah, and we're on the wrong side of that war, by the way. That's because that alien that was there, they're basically the overlords for this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of like, you know, we're on the wrong side of it, really.
Did you have a comment as well, Joey?
Yes, about the overlords that are seeing we're on the wrong side of this.
Oh, I got you. With the reptilian that you was talking about?
Yeah, we're kind of like their pawns. We're doing their bidding.
Yeah, Tabor has said this.
Thank you, Joey, for that. Tabor said that too, Preston? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
That we're on the wrong side?
Basically.
Well, that's not good to hear. We're going to go west of the Rockies, talk to Tom in Phoenix, Arizona. Tom, how are you doing?
Hi, Connie. Are you there?
Hi. Yes. What's your question?
Hi, Connie. Hi, Professor Nichols. This has got to be, by the way, one of the all-time great coast-to-coast this is fascinating.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, this is fascinating. Real quick, I wanted to, I follow some of the people who write in ufology and stuff, and when you said the small aliens don't have much of a personality, what a few of the folks in ufology have suggested is that it's better to think of them as kind of like, bioengineered robots rather than, and I was wondering if you knew anything about that. Would you concur with that, or?
That's the impression I have from it.
Yeah.
That it's almost like they have a computer for a brain.
Was there any personality whatsoever from them?
Not that I could pick up on.
So when you threw them in the shower, they didn't, they just. Thank you, Tom, for your question.
Whatever we wanted.
I love that. That's very funny. Tom, thank you very much for your question. We're going to talk to Nathan in Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Hi there, Nathan.
Hello. Hi, Connie. Hi, Preston.
Hi.
Hello, Nathan.
How are you?
What's your question?
Yes, I had a question about the chair, actually, with the Yeti. I was curious how you got the Yeti to the chair, if he came willingly or you captured him.
Who?
His question.
The Abominable Snowman?
Yeah, he was asking about the Yeti, the Bigfoot. He actually wasn't a part of the chair, but he was manifested from the chair.
Oh, okay.
He just appeared where Duncan pictured him standing.
Yeah, and Duncan was in the chair. Yeah. Thank you, Nathan, for your call. Thank you definitely for listening as well. I know, wow, that's pretty interesting about those little grays. I continue to go back to those. Let's talk to Jeff in Culver City from the wild card line number one. Jeff, what's your question?
Yeah, hi, Connie and Mr. Nichols. Yeah, that Montauk Project sounds truly evil indeed. Yet these types of mind control programs, you know, that are done on children who have suffered severe childhood traumatic events is outrageously reprehensible. I just wonder if there was a similar program conducted in the mid to late 1960s on children coming up during the turbulent times during Vietnam demonstrations, you know, the civil rights marches and those revolutionaries, you know, to somehow render these potential troublemakers less of a threat, if not outright neutralized. And I want to get your thoughts on that, Mr. Nichols.
Yes, you're 100% correct. Back in the 60s, it was called the Monarch Project, part of MK Ultra, I think it was. I think that was the Ultra side of MK, the Monarch Project. And it actually goes back to the end of World War II that this nonsense started.
Jeff, good question. Thank you very much for calling in. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, we got Logan on wild card number three.
Hey, Preston, you talked about the toroidal vortex experience you had, and I don't have something.
Vortex?
Yeah, where you noted that there was an entity at the beginning of the room. I had an experience similar to that where I found myself without a body and only a mind, and I was inside of a donut-shaped field or room, if you will, like a toroidal vortex. And in the center of that room, there's some type of being. It almost appeared like a Shiva goddess or something with multiple outstretched arms and legs. And those legs eventually would evolve into the room that was destroyed, a vortex field, which was constantly moving back into itself, feedback looping back into itself. Immediately after that, I was catapulted into another experience where I felt like I was going through a birth canal. And I saw myself being born. And then I saw myself as a baby from that perspective, yeah. Like being shot out of. After that, the last part of this vision was where this entity, some other entity, was immediately began having birth to something which became itself, and it immediately cycled and looped back around into itself, giving birth to itself as fast as you could process or think about that that loop, you know. And I didn't have any words for that, you know. I don't know if you had any input or feedback for something like that.
Yes, thank you, Logan.
For the thing before. At this point, I would like to say that the vortex being I ran into from the War of the Great or Broken Dreams appears to have infinite energy and infinite dynamics. We have a function in quantum physics that says the stronger the energy and the stronger the dynamic is, the more intelligence there is. So if we have infinite energy and dynamic, that's infinite intelligence, and I don't know of any better description of God. I'm not saying necessarily this is God. I still wonder myself.
Let's see if we can take one more quick phone call here. Wild card line number 2, Andrew of Norwalk, California. Hi, Andrew. What's your question?
Hi. Yes, I'd like to ask Preston if he has any comments on the alleged projection for 2025 by the RAND Corporation, where they're predicting that the U.S. population is going to be around 60 million or so people from the present 315 to 320 million. Do they know something that we do not know? And is this a little clue? They're giving us a little peek into what's coming, like major depopulation, not just of the U.S., but the world as well?
Thank you, Andrew. Preston, can you answer that real fast?
Yeah, this is probably true. Remember, the RAND Corporation had Sperry Rand in it, which is one of the main contractors at the Montauk Project. I'd like to say happy St. Valentine's Day to everyone.
Well, there you go. You have a lot of connections and all these things that people are asking. So we've got more to talk about next hour. We will be taking your calls. We're talking to Preston B. Nichols right now on Coast to Coast AM with more fascinating questions and more fascinating stories to come. And like he said, happy Valentine's Day.